Well, thank you for joining us today for this podcast. We have with us the great Bruce Bartu. I hope you know Bruce. If you don't, you need to get to know him and look at his career, what he's done over his a number of years. Let's just put it that way. And Bruce, we really appreciate you joining us for the conversation for industry icons. You're definitely one of them. So why don't you just tell us just very briefly your background?
Thank you, Eddie. Pleased to join you in chat today. I actually started my career working in politics. Had been active in high school as a volunteer in political campaigns. And what I realized working in politics was it was a lot more fun to raise money than it was to do political campaign work. And so I turned to become a bit of an expert in political fundraising, and then decided to go back and get a master's degree, had an opportunity to work in the university advancement office while I pursued that degree, and have stayed in professional fundraising ever since.
That's great. Well, you're great at it, Bruce. Let me ask you two questions. I'll ask the first one, then we'll chat for about a little bit about that, and then the second question. What's the most important lesson you've learned?
Never make a decision for someone else. And I learned this lesson actually early in my career in politics, but it certainly has transferred as I worked into political fundraising in higher education, fundraising and alumni relations and advancement work. And more recently, as I've spent the last 20 or so years in healthcare philanthropy, we so often think we know what motivates someone to want to become a philanthropic partner with our organization. And generally, we actually don't know. And so I have learned, and I learned early on, don't ever make assumptions. Don't think that there's not something more in someone's life story that we might never know that might be motivating them and inspiring them to want to be part of an organization. And so it's such a strong lesson for me. And I repeat this frequently in my career to colleagues, to board members, and others. Don't ever make an assumption for someone. There's usually something in their life story that's motivating them to express interest in your organization. And you won't always know what that is. So don't make decisions for people.
That's brilliant. So how do you go, you know, how many fundraisers do you supervise?
We have a team of 46 on our staff at MedStar Health. And we're spread across, of course, 10 hospitals and a number of other care sites across the Baltimore, Washington metropolitan area.
I'm trying to think of the right word to use, Bruce. Teach is not really the word I'm looking for, but how do you convey that message to those that report to you?
So it's constant communication. It's constant. In fact, I have a sign in my office, Eddie, that says one simple word, inspire. And I think the sign of a great leader is one who works to inspire. And so in inspiring our team, I hope what I'm sharing with them are my own life lessons from my own career. And I can't tell you how many times I've explained to team members how I have failed to pay attention to what people really were looking to do, or how surprised I've been through a number of stories that donors ended up choosing to become partners in a way that was totally different than where we were strategically trying to go, and that's okay. I think inspiring and leading through storytelling is so important. And I also think, Eddie, as a leader, you have to be humble, and you have to recognize that there's so much good work happening around you, and it really is a privilege and in many cases a calling to be able to coordinate all that work as a leader and inspire others to do the right thing. And particularly in the work that we do, inspiring others to be sincere and humble and invitational to folks within our organization and out in the communities we serve.
You know, as an observer, Bruce, you've got a number of gifts, but you have this ability to listen and not interrupt, which is, I think, a challenge for most of us. We want to jump in, but you just had this, I don't know if it came from your parents or just learned experience, but you have this gift of truly listening. And so I would assume that you learn what donors are wanting to do, what their dreams are, what their vision is by listening more than talking.
It's absolutely true, Eddie. And I learned these listening skills. Again, I hearken back to my early career in politics. But one of my first jobs as a 21-year-old college graduate was to go out across the state of Pennsylvania and recruit people that lived in these local, usually small towns, communities, to run for the state House of Representatives. And so we'd go into a town and we'd try to find, you know, who were the icons in that community. It might be a school board member, it might be the bank president, it might be a philanthropist in the community. You know, who were the folks that people looked up to that were natural leaders? And you spend time, think about this, a 21-year-old kid, frankly, sitting with someone and saying, you know, we'd really like you to consider sacrificing and becoming a candidate to run for a political office. And, you know, people look at you like you're crazy. Especially as a 21-year-old, you learn to accept rejection pretty quickly. But my point is, you really had to listen to people in the community and really listen and process and pay attention to what people were telling us, or we wouldn't succeed in finding the right person to run. And I don't know, I was always a big fan of my father-in-law, who we lost way too early, a couple of years after Lindsay and I were married. So I only knew him 6 or 7 years, but he was such an inspiration to me, such a motivating person. He used to take me and we'd go see a motivational speaker named Zig Ziglar.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved Zig Ziglar, right? And one of the things that struck me in the first session I ever went to that Zig Ziglar was hosting was he said, you know, there's a reason God gave you one mouth and 2 ears. You should be listening twice as much as you're speaking. And the other thing, by the way, which relates to this, I think, Eddie, is he also said, you know, when you point the finger of blame at someone, there are 3 fingers pointing right back at you. And I just love that about Zig Ziglar. Such great things to think about as leaders. But I am a really big believer in listening to people. And one of the things that frustrates me most generally about the work that we do is we so often feel like we need to learn more about someone. We need to do more research. We need to talk to more people about what their interests are. And the reality is, you have to do is sit down and engage in conversation with someone.
There you go.
And you'll begin to see their passion. You'll begin to understand what motivates them. Go visit them in their home and look around. You'll see pictures. You'll see things that are meaningful to them in life. And that's where the connection comes. You'll never find that. I don't care how sophisticated your prospect research function might be. Go talk to people. Listen and understand what their passions are.
Oh, I hope people listen. I hope they'll listen to what you're saying, because it is the key, isn't it, to success. There's no way around it. Let me ask you one more question. This is the kind of the naughty question, Bruce, but what's the biggest mistake you've made professionally, and what lesson did you learn from it?
Well, gosh, Eddie, I've made so many, and I've learned so much from them, and I hope that I don't repeat them, but I'm sure that I do, because I'm human. But I would say this. I'm a huge believer that gratitude matters. We talk about this a lot in the work we're doing in healthcare philanthropy. And I would say this. I made a really big mistake early in my healthcare philanthropy career, where I was really dismissive of people when they would talk about the experiences they had had in our healthcare organization. Because my job was, I thought, as a chief philanthropy officer, to understand the needs of the organization and go out and raise money to support those needs. That's what I was paid to do. So I was singularly focused, and I made this huge mistake of assuming that I knew what people would be willing to support. And the reality is, I needed to step back. And as I stepped back and I talked to people about why they were engaged in our organization, almost always I heard, well, I'm grateful for this physician, or I'm grateful for this particular department, or I'm grateful to this team of nurses. And I just made the mistake of sort of brushing that off and not realizing how powerful that gratitude was, and how it was the gratitude that caused people to be inspired and motivated to want to become more involved in the organization in a meaningful way. And we know that people who are philanthropic in their lives use their philanthropic investments as a way to advance things that are meaningful to them. And so this huge mistake I made early in my career was not recognizing how philanthropic investment actually often gets tied back to gratitude. And I'll tell you a 30-second story. It's not just healthcare, by the way.
It's true.
My wife and I went to a small school in western Pennsylvania. We actually met at that college. We met on her very first day, in fact. We're exceptionally grateful to that institution for the opportunity to get the education that we got, but for the opportunity to have met one another. And we've been together now over 35 years. And I can't tell you, Eddie, how many times I've told people who represent that institution, all the way up to the president, by the way, that we are so grateful to the institution for bringing us together and making us the couple and ultimately the people that we are, including I credit my career to the great relationship I have with my wife. It all ties back to that institution. We're intensely, passionately grateful. And you know that institution doesn't get it. They don't recognize how grateful we are. And I actually sat at one point and said to a team of people from the institution, you know, there are a ton of alumni couples. I bet they all feel like we feel this intense gratitude. People just dismiss it, Eddie. So it was I made a lot of mistakes, but I think my biggest mistake early in my career, not understanding the power of gratitude.
I tell you what, Bruce, you have in, 14, 15 minutes, really dug deep and made some great. I just hope we can get people to listen to this podcast, not just once, but maybe every few weeks, just listen, because it's so practical. And I tell you, for those who are listening, Bruce is, he is a great man. He's a great person. If you know him, you know what kind of person he is. But he is also truly a great leader. That's why he's one of our icons. And Bruce, I really appreciate you taking time. I know you're busy, but I really appreciate your taking time and sharing practical wisdom with these folks. I can't thank you enough. You're a good man, Bruce.
Eddie, thank you so much. Always happy to do this for a friend and a great colleague, and we appreciate our partnership with you, and I appreciate my friendship with you more than you know.
Well, I don't know about that, but I want everybody to, I hope that you'll get on, and if you ever have a chance to hear Bruce speak, or ever have a chance to meet him, or just have coffee with him, I would advise you, I don't think you would mind doing that, would you, Bruce, if someone stopped you and asked for coffee, or just visit with
you? Happy to do that at any time.
Man, do it. Take advantage of this good guy. Bruce, thank you, and thank you, everybody, for joining us on this incredible conversations with industry icons. And Bruce, you're the man. Thank you, everybody,
for
joining us.